guest today is Stephen Kellogg, and the last time I believe I saw Stephen play was on a boat, a cruise. Welcome, Stephen. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So which boat would that have been?
Well, now it could have. It was either Kaamo, but I do other cruises. Okay. So would Kaamo sound right?
Kaamo. Okay. Kaamo or Sandy Beaches, maybe? Have you done that
one? I haven't done that one. So Kaamo.
Definitely Kaamo. Okay. It's beautiful. And I'd never seen you perform live, and I was suitably impressed.
Thank you.
Clearly, your recordings are only half of what you present as an artist. And
yeah, I mean, the recordings are, and they're hard to, you know, I recently watched that Tom Petty documentary again, and he talks about the difference between being able to go out and play a song live and to get a great record of it. And I have always struggled, to be honest with you, in the studio to make it feel like, I mean, I know that's not a lot of us feel that way, but it's an ongoing journey.
Yeah, I think Springsteen solved that by just recording a live album,
mm-hmm.
which you've done also recently. You did a live Greatest Hits record?
Yeah, just put it out a couple months ago, and I celebrated my 40th birthday by taking really a great, tremendous band on the road, and we recorded all the shows and put a record out from it. So.
And your last studio album came out in 2016, relatively mm-hmm. recently,
yep.
Southwest Northeast, which was incredibly ambitious, and it was basically all four directions. You recorded in different places and with different people.
That's right.
And where did the idea for that come from?
Well, you know, in the times that we're living in here, you know, you make records and you start, and it started to feel like the record cycle got shorter and shorter, and you put so much work and effort into this album. And so I was thinking, what am I going to do? And I got on a plane, a 6 a.m. real early flight, and as luck would have it, one of my best friends in the business was sitting next to me, a guy named Mark Roberge, who's the lead singer in a band called OAR. So he's sitting next to me. We have a 5-hour flight. He said, let me hear what you're working on. We're both listening to each other's stuff. And he said, Kellogg, your stuff, from one song to the next, it all sounds so different. You got to make a record that's the seasons, and each one should be a season. And I had heard of some people doing the seasons, so I knew that wasn't it, but that was when the light bulb went off of, hey, wouldn't that be fun to do the South in Nashville and kind of do the country rock thing that I do there, and West was kind of the folkier side of things, and East would be the poppier side, and just to get to fully embrace the different genres that I sort of like to spin in, you know?
And your home is?
Is in the Northeast, in Connecticut, yeah.
So you're super comfortable in one region.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a New Englander in my blood. So we did part of it in Woodstock, and that was close. Yeah.
So aren't you due for another new album?
I am. And you know, I was supposed to go in last month. We had the studio booked and the musicians, and I had songs. And as I was leading up to it, I just looked at it and felt like these aren't the songs. This isn't it. And one of the benefits of being independent again is that, you know, you do have that freedom to say, let's not do this right now. I can't really afford to go in and cut songs that my heart's not entirely in. And it's weird to look at a big bunch of work you've done and go like, thanks, guys. We'll let you know. But it also feels good to be diving back into the writing and just digging a little harder. You know,
you're clearly making the right call. I always am stunned when I go back and look at like the Beatles contract, where they'd have to create like 3 albums in a year, and what albums they actually created.
I know it's I mean, and honestly, you know, I'll tell you, Ken, it was when I had more label pressure. I was too young to appreciate the positive aspect of the good part of that is it does spur you on. I just, in my youth, I think, you know, you go, don't tell me what to do. I can't, you know, but I kind of, at this point, I sort of miss somebody saying, come on, give us a hit, you know, because you want to show, I mean, some good songs were written out of just like, I'll show you what I can do, you know, and some of my best stuff kind of happened that way. So
a lot of folks first heard you as Stephen Kellogg and the Sixers.
Mm-hmm.
You still have a working relationship with members of that band?
I do, yeah. I do. I see different members, different amounts, and even play with some of the guys sometimes. And, you know, there's, it's fundamentally love, just long, you know, 10 years, 10 good years. And Sam Getz from that band has gone on to, he's got a gold record with his band Welshly Arms right now. And the irony for me, and I've told Sam this, is that he's the only guy in our band that didn't have a mic. Five-piece band, four guys singing. The guy who's by far sold the most records and had the most success commercially was the guy we didn't give a mic to. I'm like, great, here's my legacy.
So, well, you just saved his talent for another application.
I know, yeah, exactly, exactly.
So you mentioned being 40, and I would think at this stage of your career, you've had great success. You're a very known quantity in Americana and folk, and you're in the upper 1% of sort of known artists. How do you then map out the next quarter century of your career? You know, I know it's a lot of pressure, but it's a tough game, traveling and you're winning over new audiences all the time.
Yeah, I'm really, it's a great question. And if you have an answer, I'm all ears. I mean, I really wouldn't change anything about what's happened in the last 16 years of my life. Shifts have to happen. I have four beautiful daughters. I have, you know, there's only so much touring you can do at some point, you know, it keeps me up at night, you know, it keeps me up at night thinking what's my role to play here, right. You know? And I think it could go a lot of ways, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't even know. I don't know how that sounds as an answer, but yeah, I really don't know.
I spiraled you into a midlife crisis, but
no, you're. I'm already there, boss. You know.
Well, just it strikes me you've had a lot of success, and maintaining that success in a very tough business that's gotten tougher and tougher in terms of, you know, you've had significant revenue from records, but probably not so much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, certainly not four daughters worth.
And so you got a tour. You got a play, but you know, you also got, I'm not your therapist here, but you're a fine writer.
Thank you.
There's always going to be demand for content. You know, people are looking at this phone for 20 hours a day. There's going to be demand for music and art.
Yeah, no, I mean, and even having you say that stuff like that, it helps, because it reminds you who you are and where you came from. And you know, this year I wrote with Robert Randolph on his record, and it got the Grammy nod for blues record. And that was a thrill as a writer, because it was the first thing I had worked on that that sort of had a life of its own in some respects. And so I try to stay real open to wherever the light is.
Yeah. Well, it is great to catch up with you. I want to put you on the spot a little bit.
Okay.
When you talk about the album's not ready, right? So I don't like these songs. This is not my album.
Mm-hmm.
How will you know when you do have that? How will you know when it's done?
Well, yeah. I've been good about this in varying degrees over the course of my career. But I think you know the songs because you can't wait to play them for people. You can't wait to share what you've done, you know? And the best stuff that I've ever worked on had that quality. So I think that's how we'll know. I never look at the marketplace as the driving factor. I just look at, how is this going to feel to either play live or to put this on hit play and play it for someone? And am I going to be able to be proud of what I've done? And as long as the answer is yes, then it goes.
That's really smart. We hope to talk to you again when that album is ready. In the meantime, let's leave folks with one of your fine songs called Last Man Standing.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you so much for the chat.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Choose sunlight, gonna drink wine, bound to win a few fights before my time. Gonna make love now, paint the future bright. Gonna be the last man standing tonight. Gonna be the last man. Gonna be the last man. Gonna be the last man standing in the night. Gonna
yeah. Gonna pour my heart out till the day after I die. And when I am an angel looking for a landing, gonna be the last man standing. Gonna be the last. Gonna be the last man standing in the night.
This is Ken Paulson from Americana Music News, and our guest today is Ruby Boots, who, like everyone else who's ever come to Nashville, came from Perth. I think you're the first. I'm pretty sure Johnny Cash didn't start his career in Perth. What a long journey that is, literally, figuratively.
Literally, it's in distance. It's Nashville and Perth are furthest away than, well, I'll rephrase. Nashville's as far away as you can get in distance from Perth, Western Australia.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, than anywhere else in the world.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to tell us about this journey. How in the world do you go from Perth to standing on stage in America, rocking the room?
We don't have that long.
We have, because you've got a great story. I want to leave time for your great story.
I left home pretty early, and I'll try and do this in three sentences.
No, you have a good story. Let it breathe.
I left home pretty early, and I was kicking around Perth for a while, and I had to get out of the city. So I hitchhiked up to Broome, Western Australia, and I started working on purling boats up there. And I proceeded to work out at sea for almost just under 3 years.
For a non-nautical audience, explain what that is that you did.
It was pretty backbreaking work. We would pull up all the lines every day and pull the cages out of the ocean and make sure the ropes were clean and high water pressure the shells, and then chip the shells so that they would be able to close, because if things got in their mouth, then they'd die and the pearl would die. So that was us every day for 10 hours a day on the ocean, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, and we'd be out there for a couple of weeks at a time, and anywhere working on a land camp, which was a tiny little island with singular rooms and a mess hall, or a houseboat. Yeah. So that I spent a bit of time out there, and then travelled through Europe and the UK and started busking. And that's kind of where I started earning my stripes, I guess, you know, as a singer and a player. And I had started to learn guitar on the boats. So I got back from UK and Europe and thought I could, you know, I could do this back at home, surely, if I can do it on the other side of the world. So I started playing open mic nights and gigging. And then as soon as I started playing shows regularly, I found out I had nodules on my throat, so I took 3 years off singing and worked on the music business side. And then 2010, I recorded my first EP, and I did three more of them. And by the time I had started to think about recording a record, Nashville was on my radar, and I had started visiting from 2012, and I recorded my record, and that kind of went really well in Australia. And then eventually, after going a couple of times a year to Nashville and setting some things up and just basically making friends, I moved there in 2016. Yeah.
So I can't help but notice you're wearing a Sweethearts of the Rodeo t-shirt, the Great Birds album.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an inspiration for you somewhere along the lines?
Well, I mean, I've listened to, obviously, a lot of Graham Parsons and Emma Lou and the Byrds, and I'm a huge Tom Petty fan, and he absolutely adores the Byrds. So, yeah, it's all in there.
Cool.
The melodies.
Well, as a resident of Nashville since 1997, and if you've been there 20 years, by the way, you can pretend to be a native. I want to welcome you to town.
How many years?
Just 20.
Oh.
But 20 is enough because everybody just moved in last week. So pretty soon you'll have seniority in town as well. It's a great music town, and I assume you're living on the east side of the city.
That's right.
Where all the cool kids live. Yeah. And where rents are not quite as obscene as they are. You know, I was struck. I saw you last night, and you're great. And I
thank you.
I loved your show. It rocked. It touched hearts. It is not folk music. You know,
no.
This is a folk music alliance here, and somehow you got in. You know, you somehow got past the security guards.
Yeah, I paid them a lot of money.
Anyway, but it's great. And what I'm struck by is when I read the people writing about you, that like T-Rex comes up, and it's like, wow, does that surprise you?
Not really.
Because?
Well, I wanted to make a rock and roll record, and, you know, I feel like with trying to make a rock and roll record that a lot of the twang elements still come through, and people seem to think it's working, so I'll leave that to everyone else to decide.
Well, you may be too young, and you may be growing up in West Australia. One of my reference points last night, in part because of your jumpsuit, was Suzy Quatro.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, Suzy's back.
There's been a couple of them thrown out there, you know, and I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I'm just trying to be myself, but, you know, they're amazing artists.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the song I'm a Woman. And I'm sure this has not escaped your notice, but another Australian, Helen Reddy, wrote I Am Woman.
Mm.
And I thought how striking it was that 40 years later, entirely different take, but both of them are about the dignity of women.
Mm.
Can you talk a little bit about what led you to write that song?
Well, interestingly enough, the way that you phrased the question is just, it's there in a nutshell. It's like it was written 40 years ago. Why are we still writing about it now?
Right.
I mean, I want to write about it because I feel like it's part of my duty as an artist to speak about the inequality and injustices and not in every song, but, you know, at least part of the time. And that song was written from a place of anger, I guess, at the start, frustration, like feeling powerless when I was, you know, having to bear witness to hearing people say that they can treat women's bodies the way they want, grab them, take them, you know, it's to whatever they say, however it comes. And so it was very hurtful for me to hear that. And you feel powerless as a woman when you do hear things like that because almost speechless trying to answer the question if that, you know, comes out through. But so I wanted to write a song that kind of invited everyone in, like as humans, and showcased women in our greatest beauty, internal beauty, and all of our strengths and our vulnerability and everything that we have to offer, and anything else, seeing it any other way is kind of unacceptable, you know.
It's very powerful. Do you always do it a cappella?
On the record, it's very stark, but yes, live I do it a cappella. I kind of feel like approaching the song that way, at least I'm showing a little bit of bravery in my approach as well to hopefully have an impact with the song live. Yeah, and it's working so far.
It really does. You know, somebody who lived through the period when Helen Reddy did I Am Woman, there's a problem with something like that becoming a hit record because when it's on the radio every hour on the hour, in time it begins to sound like a jingle, kind of cloying.
Yeah.
But over time people came back to it and recognized what a courageous song it was for the time. And I was struck that when they did the Women's March in Los Angeles, Helen Reddy was there, sang the song, and there were I don't know, it was like 60,000 people in the streets of Los Angeles, and I thought, how great it is that this heroine is out there still doing it,
yeah.
And how tragic it is that this heroine is still out there doing this.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's, yeah.
So Nashville, the home of co-writing.
Yeah.
Have you found people who are you compatible with in East Nashville?
Absolutely. I co-wrote so many songs whilst I was trying to write the record, and, you know, I had a really busy couple of years from the last record, and I was managing myself and just was, you know, juggling work, and it was a lot, you know. And then I land in Nashville and have to write my second record, and there's really was nothing to draw from. I had been so lost in the previous cycle that, you know, I had to reinvent myself, but investigate how I viewed the world and how I viewed myself again, you know, and live life a little bit. And it was through all the collaborators in Nashville, who most of them were dear friends of mine, that allowed me to unlock a lot of those doors. So I was very grateful to be writing my second record in Nashville.
So you wrote a bit with Nikki Lane?
Yeah, wrote a couple of songs with Nikki Lane. I've lived at Nikki's house on and off for a little while over the course of a couple of years, and we hang out a lot, so there are a lot of ideas being thrown around all the time. And one was at Nashville Airport on our way to Chicago, and we were singing a melody there. And another one was at her kitchen table, and que sera, sera.
You also have been in the company of the Texas Gentlemen.
Yes.
And have they been a backup band to you, or
not live, but on the record? Yeah, fine company to be keeping. Yeah.
Yeah, and for a group called the Texas Gentlemen, they rock.
Yeah. Yeah. They really know how to tear up the stage and light it on fire live, and they live up to their name. They're all great gentlemen.
So if I heard you correctly, you did not pick up the guitar till you're out on this ship.
Sure. Yep.
You're pretty good.
Oh, okay. Well,
you're
I
awfully
feel like
good. You're awfully good for somebody who picked it up, you know, as
late
as
in
you
life.
Did.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you know, I try.
Yeah. And it's a very economical style. I mean, you're not trying to impress anybody with a number of notes. There's no Alvin Lee in your mix. It's very direct. I mean, I hear the Tom Petty influence there. It's
yeah. I believe I'm more attracted to a hook and a good chorus than anything more complicated, I guess. It just gets me, and that's, you know, like Mike Campbell says, it's like, don't bore us, get us to the chorus, you know.
Well, you're only beginning the American chapter of your career, and we're delighted you're here and in Nashville. It's been a pleasure visiting with you. I want to make sure our listeners get to hear the real thing here. Of all the songs on your new record, what would you like us to share with them now?
I feel like today is a good day to play Don't Talk About It, the title track off the record.
Don't Talk About It. And we'll continue to talk about your career, I'm sure, for years to come. Don't Talk About It. Here's Ruby Boots.
All that
but don't talk about it.
Americon Music News is a podcast produced by Sprinter Media, music by Dave Paulson, and you can reach us at amneditor@gmail.com.